Previously on Willing to Adapt.
So today we're going to be talking about the origin story of Cinderella, some of the many versions of the fairy tale. Before they were written down, there were a lot of variations because they were all told orally. And so, you know, it's like playing the game of telephone, right? You know, you pass the story along and then it changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely seemed in the pro version that it was much more of like, they're not a great family. They kind of mistreat her, but it's not the worst thing.
Correct. Yeah. It's called donkey skin.
Okay. That sounds inappropriate, but tell me.
So the Grimm version is different in that.
In many ways.
In many ways. Yeah, actually it is. In the version
Did you get the weird name too?
Cinderwench?
Oh, mine was worse.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if I can say it. I don't want to get an E.
Okay.
I don't know if I should keep reading this out loud to my toddler sister. Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. And welcome back to Willing to Adapt. I am Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
You got a kick out of that one.
Yes.
You got to mix it up. You know, this is the second part for our episodes on Cinderella. If you missed our last one, we did discuss the origin stories of Cinderella, the folktale, fairy tale, whatever you want to call them. Specifically, we focused on Perrault, the French version from the late 1600s, and the Brothers Grimm version from 1812, which are vastly different.
Correct, with a little smattering of some of the other versions.
Yeah, you know, we kind of touched base, and there's so many versions.
Correct.
Yeah, but those are the most popular versions.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now on to Disney.
Today we're discussing the 1950 Disney animated film Cinderella, same name, you know, why fix what's not broken.
And then we'll talk about Cinderella 2 and Cinderella 3, just kidding.
Those don't have adaptations, so no.
Actually, I've never seen them. I just saw them on the Disney Plus when I watched them.
The third one's good.
Really?
Yeah. The third one is surprisingly good. Do you know the story for that one?
I read the synopsis because I was curious. And
it's
it says something about a twist in time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a one thing. It actually gives the prince a personality.
Oh, okay.
Like you actually get to know the prince and get to know, then figure out like what he's like instead of just never really hearing from him at all. And
yeah.
But the third one's actually a lot of fun because it's what if the stepmother comes across the fairy godmother's wand and ends up going back and making it so that Cinderella does not try on the slipper and the slipper fits Anastasia.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then she ends up just, you know, obviously like. You know, as the story goes, she kind of like essentially like hypnotizes the prince so that he believes that Anastasia is the one who danced with him.
Okay.
But it's actually really fun because then Cinderella has to go and prove it was her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it actually worth watching?
I actually think it is. Huh. Yeah. Like I would watch it again. I've watched it a few times.
See if my wife wants to watch it one night.
Yeah. It's one of the few times that the whole like modern female empowerment stuff actually worked.
Okay.
For them. Because she doesn't, they don't change her character as Cinderella so much as, but it gives her some more agency and she actually goes out of her way to fight for it.
Yeah. Which is a critique of the Cinderella stories.
We can talk about that.
Yes. That was actually a critique of the fairy tales or the folk tales, but all right, on to the movie. I have no facts available. My phone's down there.
You've never seen this movie?
So, funny enough, that's your first question as usual.
It is.
So, the first time I saw the movie was definitely as a kid. I want to say maybe on VHS, most likely though, if my dad didn't rent it, it was something we watched on The Wonderful World of Disney. But really, I got to know the movie through my daughter watching it. So, when she was maybe 1 and 2, about the time she started walking, she discovered... In Spanish, it's called Senescencia.
That's a lot of S's.
It is. It's C's. But, and so she...
Shows you how much I know Spanish.
Yeah. And so she would basically ask us, you know, she wanted to watch Cenicienta because we taught her Spanish.
Say that five times fast.
Yeah, when she was young. And eventually she got to a point when she was starting to walk and she had the motor control of her hands. She was able to turn the VCR on and actually put the movie in. And so that
getting her trained early.
Pretty much. And so she watched that movie over and over. So I've probably seen the movie at least 100 times. Mm-hmm. Nothing surprised me in rewatching it for this.
There you go. So the 1950 movie, mm-hmm. Cinderella, that we're discussing, produced by Walt Disney Productions, released by RKO Radio Pictures. It was based on Charles Perrault's 1697 fairy tale. Features Eileen Woods as Cinderella, Eleanor Audley, Verna Felton, Rhoda Williams, James MacDonald, and Louis Van Ruten. And most of those names probably mean nothing to most of our listeners, except that I think it's very important to explain that. And it was a major success for Disney. So Disney, if you are interested in learning a little bit more about Disney, you can go back and listen to our episode on Sleeping Beauty, where we do talk about Disney as a company and getting to the point where they made Sleeping Beauty. But Disney, really briefly, Walt Disney created Wet Enterprises? Walt Disney? Yeah, Walter Elias Disney Enterprises, something like that. Dad's somewhere being like, come on, Eric. But he created Disney, and originally he was creating cartoons.
Correct.
They were like short cartoons. And it was not until 1937 that Walt Disney decided to make a full-length animated movie as Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
And no one thought it would work. No one thought people were going to sit that long for a cartoon.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And yet everyone loved it. Mm-hmm. It was so good. It was supposed to be Disney's folly, they said. And yet it did wonders for the company.
Mm-hmm.
People loved it. It boosted Walt Disney in the eyes of the public and critics, and it gave the company money to do more.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun because Walt Disney did not immediately do another princess movie. He went and he did Pinocchio.
Okay.
I mean, and then they started eventually moving into other things, obviously other ventures, but he did Pinocchio and he did Bambi,
mm-hmm.
and he did Fantasia, which are all very different.
Yeah,
but they didn't do very well.
Yeah,
they did fine, and I think a lot of critics loved them. But what did not work for Disney is the fact that Disney no longer had a European market because of the Second World War, and so they missed out on a lot of the money that they would have gotten. And so during the Second World War, Disney really had to survive by making films for the American government. So like propaganda films and like training films and whatever, you know. Yeah. And so Disney started making films. Their feature films turned into package films, they called them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you got movies like Fun and Fancy Free, and you had Ichabod and Mr. Toad and stuff. So where it's like these different stories put together to make a full-length movie, but it wasn't one consistent plot line for the whole film.
Yeah.
But then after the Second World War, the company was severely in debt, and it was to a point where Walt's brother, Roy, who was always the more practical financial one, literally told Walt, sell the company and just retire and live off of the money you've made off of selling the company.
Wow.
And Walt said no. And he said, we're going to make another full-length animated movie, but what we're going to do is we're going to go back to what we know that really worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the film that really worked for them was Snow White. And so he did another princess movie.
Sleeping Beauty.
Not yet.
No?
Cinderella.
Really?
Cinderella came first. Cinderella came out in 1950.
Okay. I need a chart with all the Disney movies on it.
So, Cinderella came out in 1950. They were also working on Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland at the time. By the time you come to this point, this is where his animator Mary Blair really stepped up, because Walt found her style and he loved it and he thought it would work really well.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so you see a lot of her style in these next three movies, Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, and Peter Pan. And anyway, the budget for this movie was $2.2 million, and it ended up making $182 million.
Wow.
Yes, it did so well. But this movie, if it did poorly, would have ruined Disney.
Yeah.
There's so many times that he went and took a risk and it worked out. And it was funny because they were talking about the making of it where they had no money.
Mm.
And so they kind of got who they could get.
Mm-hmm.
And they filmed live action, everything in live action for this movie before they animated anything. Because they knew it was so cheap to film and edit on film,
mm-hmm.
than it was to change what you've animated.
Yeah.
Because of how much it costs to animate.
Interesting.
And so they had the voice actors did their voiceovers and redid all the recordings, but then they had actors come in and like mouth over the recordings. And so some animators were angry because they said that they were very limited to only what was filmed live. And so they would say, well, we can do this. And then they said, well, we can't get that camera angle. And he's like, but we can get that angle with the animation. Mm-hmm. And then they would say, but you're going to have to go based off our camera angles.
Mm.
Because they really just couldn't afford it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that was just a bit of fun trivia. But the movie did so well, so ridiculously well, and it was nominated for awards and things, that and it made money off of the soundtrack and stuff too, apparently. I think it was the first one that they sold the soundtrack for, something like that. And it made so much money for it that Disney was able to move on to other projects.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to work with ABC to acquire the television program and then move on to making Disneyland.
Wow. I kind of was wondering about that, if mm-hmm. that's where the seed money came from.
Basically, it's a big part of it, yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. And it was funny because Walt actually was a little hands-off this project. Like, mm-hmm. he would check in, and he always had final say.
Yeah.
But this is interesting. You'll like this. He was a little distracted because he was all the way in England. Do you know why?
Acquiring the rights for Mary Poppins?
No. He was working on Treasure Island.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember we talked about Treasure Island?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. He was dealing with all the issues with Treasure Island, remember?
Yeah.
For those of you interested who have not listened to our episode on Treasure Island, you can hear a little bit more about that mm-hmm. if you listen to that.
So who did the music for this?
So the music was by Oliver Wallace and Paul Smith.
Okay.
And they're actually the reason why they found Eileen Woods to play Cinderella, because they were friends with her.
Oh, okay.
She had a radio program at the time,
mm-hmm.
but she was very young, and so most people didn't really know her, unless you listened to her program, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know enough about her. But she's got a great voice, though.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, that's there's not a whole lot more backstory I think we need to go into for that, except that it went through very many variations.
Mm.
Cinderella was one of the stories they considered to be their first full-length animated movie, and then they ended up going with Snow White. And so it was always kind of on the back burner for them. They always kind of were thinking about, well, maybe we'll do this again.
Yeah.
And they had different people working on it, and it went through many versions until it got to where it was.
Okay.
And some of the stuff they had worked on early on ended up in the final film, mm-hmm. but a lot of it didn't.
I did see a deleted song.
Oh, there's always deleted songs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they're usually not very good.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, I can see why it was deleted.
I can see why this was taken out. I want to jump in here real quick and say this so we can get it out of the way.
Okay.
And you and I have talked about this before, and we did talk a little about it with Sleeping Beauty.
The dark side of Disney? No, just kidding.
Jeez.
I have no idea what you're going to mention.
The issues that feminists have with Cinderella. Yes. Do you know what I'm talking about?
So, I mean, outside of what I brought up in the last episode regarding what I read on the academic side for the patriarchy and stuff like that, the main thing I could think of for Disney is their criticism regarding the princesses and how they're usually, well, they usually see them as weak females who have to be rescued by men.
There is some of that,
like,
yes.
That. Yeah.
There's a YouTuber that I watched for this. I've watched her a few times. There's actually a lot of videos out there in defense of Cinderella and mm-hmm. other things,
mm-hmm.
but there is a video specifically called In Defense of Cinderella.
Interesting.
And it is by the YouTuber Aiden Elizabeth.
Okay.
And it was actually really interesting because she discusses the issue of what she calls passive viewing. Cinderella is one of these movies that you've grown up with it.
Correct, yeah.
And you've watched it when you were younger, and so you watch it in a way that is not aware of the nuances.
Mm.
And that is how you remember it.
Yeah.
Unless you sit down and you try to rewatch it with new eyes, you're going to passively watch it because you know the story and yeah. you've seen this version.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And she says that is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it also is ideology can blind you.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest critique Cinderella specifically tends to get from a lot of feminists and modern folk is that, in their words, mm-hmm. they say she took a lot of abuse and did nothing about it and waited for a man to save her.
Mm.
But when you actually look at the story, specifically the Disney version,
yeah.
But I found this time around, even the fairy tales,
mm-hmm.
never in any of the versions that I come across is she looking to get married.
That's true.
She only wants to go to the ball,
mm-hmm.
or the festival, or yeah. whatever it is. It's never to meet a prince. It's never to get married. It's never anything like that. It's never love or anything. It's just she wants a normal night where she can have fun and like live it up.
Yeah.
And have a like just have a good time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And be treated as equals, essentially, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's only because of her good nature and her virtues and so on that she is, for lack of a better way of saying, rewarded with a better life by getting married to the prince.
Mm.
Like, it's not something she sought out. It just ended up happening, and she yeah. ended up having a better life because of it. And a lot of people don't notice that. A lot of people, for some reason, have put it in their head that she went to get married, that she was looking for the prince. Yeah. When in reality, that's not at all what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even make the argument in the fairy tales, that's not even the goal of the stepsisters.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to go to the ball.
Correct.
It's really not until the Disney version specifically do we see the stepsisters and the stepmother trying to get the stepsisters to marry the prince.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Disney version, she doesn't even know it's the prince.
That's right, yeah.
She goes to the ball because it's the command that every eligible maiden is to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially the stepmother is breaking royal command by not allowing her to go. And so when Cinderella does go, she starts like interacting with and dancing with the prince, but she literally does not know it's the prince until the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
And in regards to the whole idea of, you know, she kind of just stayed in this abusive situation and like didn't do anything about it. In that video, I think Aiden Elizabeth, and then The Take also has a video called Stop Blaming the Victim, which I really appreciated.
Yeah.
And what they were kind of saying in both videos is there's this modern feminist view that if you need to be a strong woman, you need to be masculine.
Mm.
And so it devalues femininity.
Yeah.
And it devalues the traditional, you know, stereotypical elements that come with femininity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, in these modern princess movies, they're strong because they take on the role that is traditionally a man's role,
mm-hmm.
which I find very interesting. And yeah. so because these older films, these older princesses, they are more traditionally feminine, but you can argue they are very strong. They're very emotionally strong. Like they persevere through these circumstances, and they don't let these people change them, or they don't grow worse because of these abusive situations or things like that. And that makes them strong.
Yeah.
Because they're able to push through it and stay true to who they are and, mm-hmm. and so on. And I will also say in the Disney version, Cinderella is not very passive. Like, she actually does stand up to her stepmother and stepsister when she finds the opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
In the Disney version.
And she tries. Yeah, so there's times when she's trying to make her voice heard, mm-hmm. but then the stepmother overrides her.
Mm-hmm. In the Disney version specifically, and it doesn't say this in other versions, it specifically says in the Disney version at the very beginning after the prologue,
mm-hmm.
that one, the stepmother made her true character known after the father died.
Correct, yeah.
And in this version, it's very clear the father died.
Yeah.
And then it does say she was abused. Like, it literally says Cinderella was abused by her stepmother and her stepsisters.
Mm.
And so it's made very clear at the beginning that mm-hmm. this is an abusive household.
Yeah.
And the stepmother has no magical powers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has no... She's not a witch. You know, she's not a fairy, evil fairy. She's not whatever. She doesn't have a magic mirror or anything.
Yeah.
She's literally, the power she has is through her abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And she is scary.
Yep. And from the psychological perspective, mm-hmm. I'm a little more well-versed in that. and I can, like, honestly, I know people, I've met people, and I've interacted with people mm-hmm. who have come from abusive households. And I'm not talking about physically or anything, but I'm just psychologically abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad part is you don't know that that's what you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And so take this.
Especially when it starts when you're young.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I'm thinking of one person right now. She's been in a psychologically abusive household and has no idea. And to her, it's the way things should be. And
yeah. Well, and if you're not exposed to anything better.
And that's part of it is you could try to say something to them, but they can't see it
mm-hmm.
because of the way things work. And so, and then take even more so that this is supposed to be like, what would you say?
Roughly the 1800s.
The 1800s?
Yeah. Like, it looks like it's somewhere in the 1860s-ish.
Yeah. Where would she have gone?
Yeah, that's the other argument.
There was no activists and centers for women yet.
Yeah, and it's not like some stranger would have taken her in.
Exactly. Yeah. She would have been destitute living with the animals in the forest.
Yeah, well, yeah. Or you know, I mean, this is a Disney movie. This wouldn't have happened, but mm-hmm. like she could have sold herself.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, you do what you got to do to survive, unfortunately. You know, and that's the tragic part of it. But
mm-hmm.
but the other side of this is, this was her family's house.
Yeah.
This is her home.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's changed under her stepfamily, like this is where she was growing up as a child. This is where her happy memories of her mother and her father were. And I think it's clear that she had a happy childhood until her dad died.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's one of those things where in the video, like, stop blaming the victim,
mm-hmm.
which I really liked. It was saying, like, there's this hypocrisy with this whole anti, like, Cinderella movement with the feminists and other things, like the anti-traditional Disney princesses movement, where they don't quite understand the situation, and it's like they're just really pushing their ideology. But specifically with the victim blaming, it's this idea of, like, I'm gonna get real serious here, trigger warning, whatever, like, if someone was raped,
mm-hmm.
and then there's, like, those people who victim blame, were like, what were you wearing? And why didn't you leave? And, like, did you tease him or whatever?
Yeah.
Like those aren't okay.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't take away the horrible things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're putting blame on the wrong person.
Yeah.
Like, that is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but these are the same people who would say this and then still say to, like, Cinderella, why didn't you leave? And why did you take it? And all these things.
Yeah, I have a friend, and she got tired of hearing me always say, when she would bring up something, and I would say, the world is more complicated than you want to believe
right,
it is.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really what it comes down to, even from, because, I mean, this stems from a fairy tale. And when you think about some of these folk tales, they stem from, yes, they're supposed to be teaching a message, but they're also stemming from the reality of what some have seen and mm-hmm. some continue to this day to see. You know, there's plenty of women and boys and men who are stuck in situations, and that's the point of a lot of these stories, is to, at least for Disney, mm-hmm. is to give hope.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially older Disney. It's their life can be better,
mm-hmm.
and, like, we can become better.
Yeah.
And you can persevere through tough circumstances.
Exactly.
and so on.
And I'm not saying it's a panacea for any of the real evils out there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course not. But in regards to the daily struggles, the daily crap, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. a lot of us have to live through, you know, we have these softer messages. And I think that's what Disney has always tried to stand mm-hmm. for, is, yes, it's not a panacea to take care of the evils, but it's there to help us get through
mm-hmm.
the everyday struggles.
Yeah, and I'll go out on a limb and say, you know, people might not like this, Disney's 1950s mm-hmm. Cinderella is not a love story. It's a story about her.
Yeah. Based on how you framed it, the information you were giving, I would agree with you. Yeah.
Because in the Disney version, this is something I didn't get until this time around. I don't know why I never pieced it together.
Mm-hmm.
That the events of this film
mm-hmm.
take place in a day.
That's right. They do. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I caught that when the king is like, when he's like, the king tells the
Grand Duke.
Grand Duke.
Yeah.
you know, yeah. my son's home. Make yeah. the ball
tonight.
And he's like,
yes.
What tonight?
Yeah, and every maiden must come. And he's like tonight. Yeah, and so besides the prologue that gives like a brief understanding of how she got to the situation, mm-hmm. it opens the morning of the ball, and then the story ends. I mean, you can argue the wedding took place much later.
Yeah.
But when she leaves that house mm-hmm. for the last time, it's the next morning.
Mm.
So in regards to that, you can also make the argument that the abuse you're seeing in that day was like the pinnacle of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you definitely get the idea that she has been abused. But it's really subtle and it's nuanced. And so I think the biggest, like what I've seen from other people and what I've watched myself, is the biggest tip off to this is the scene where the stepmother has the stepsisters like rip off all the clothes from Cinderella.
Yeah, that was cruel.
Which, again, this is for the Disney version. This is not in any of the other versions, right? That was added in. And what makes it even more sad is the fact that they made it that was her mother's dress.
Yeah.
But the stepmother, when she starts to walk closer to Cinderella, Cinderella actually shies away and looks scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people said, like, when you're abused, like, you know what can come. Mm-hmm. And, like, you will be scared. Like,
yeah.
And so she is scared because, like, she has experienced this abuse before and she doesn't know what's going to come.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the first time in the movie that you really see her scared.
Yeah, I forgot. I didn't think about that. Do they ever mention it explicitly about her character?
The stepmother or Cinderella?
About Cinderella.
What do you mean?
So, you know how in the folk tales, mm-hmm. they mention that she was a kind person or a good
person?
Well,
yeah. So, in the very beginning, the narrator does mention that despite the abuse and stuff, she did manage to remain a kind, hopeful, and like, I can't remember everything, but like essentially virtuous.
Okay.
Like, she did not allow her horrible situation to change like the good in her.
And that's the other message. I wasn't sure if I know it's mm-hmm. in the other version somewhat, but that was something else I think that is a message that's trying to get across. Mm-hmm. And it's regards to, like you were saying about having a victim mentality,
mm-hmm.
is a lot of how we view the world, and to some degree the consequences that can come from it are also loose, can be somewhat based on our
personal experiences. Personal,
not just that, but also our outlooks.
Oh, sure.
And how we view things, you know. But I've always liked the idea of pointing out her virtue,
mm-hmm.
who she was and her character, mm-hmm. especially as opposed to her stepsisters or stepmother.
Well, because I find that the people who want her to lash out at her stepsisters or mm-hmm. her stepmother, one, don't understand like how bad that would be for her.
Yeah.
But two, that would mean that she's like stooping to their level.
Yeah.
And she's becoming that.
But I would argue that's a lot of our world today.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But you know, this is me making the argument against that.
Yeah, no, so I agree.
You can say she's a very strong person
mm-hmm.
because she doesn't let it affect her.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she is doing the chores. Yeah, she's feeding the animals. She has to wake up early to make breakfast and whatever, you know. And like, it's all terrible. Like, that's not great. But the fact that she essentially lets it just run off like water.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she still is true to herself and is a good person.
She's Bruce Lee.
Sure. Like water. Yes. That's very Taoist.
I saw that phrase came up on something I was watching this week.
Well, because that's what Taoism is all about, right? Be like water.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so like there is a great strength in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I think a lot of people don't like that because it's difficult to attain. Mm. It is extraordinarily difficult to be resilient and to hold true to, you know, like who you are and goodness and kindness in the face of horrible situations.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to just turn to being just like them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I'm guilty of it. And so why would somebody be promoting something that is difficult?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're not going to want to do it.
Yeah.
Because then that would put a spotlight on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But no. I think it's I was laughing though because there's just so much about this movie that I haven't watched it in so long mm-hmm. that I was like, this is better than I remembered. I will say that the weak part for this movie for me
yeah.
is the sequences with the mice and the cats. Like that Lucifer and the mice. Like I think they run long. I think they definitely did not need to be there as long as they were
yeah.
and all that. But it does show I kind of piece it together this time around. I really liked that it shows Cinderella takes care of the animals
mm-hmm.
and like clothes them, gives yeah. them some sort of dignity and respect and literally saves them mm-hmm. from her step family. Like they're caught in traps and she will save them and like give them a new life and stuff that she can't have.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and in return, the animals help her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they will help her with chores. They will help her make her bed and help her wash. And
they ultimately did the dress for her.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was, like, the ultimate help, like, because they cared about her, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, in this version, it kind of is a... I thought, to me, it was a little bit of a throwback to the Grimm version. Because in this version, you know, she does stand up for herself, which is new.
Mm-hmm.
She tells her stepmother, I can go to the ball because mm-hmm. it's commanded that I go to the ball. And then her stepmother's the one that says, if you get your chores all done and you have something suitable to wear,
yeah.
you can go. And that felt like a throwback to the Grimm version with the whole lentil thing and mm-hmm. finishing chores, you know. But then they purposefully add on extra chores to her.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the extra chores she had to do because the stepmother blamed her for Gus being under the cup. And so like Anastasia freaked out.
Yeah.
Because you get the idea that all of those chores that she gave to her were extra.
Yeah.
And were not normally expected of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so those chores she had to do, but then she also had to do all the extra stuff, like the dress mending and stuff like that, you know?
No, yeah. No, I agree.
And so what I think the take in their video, Stop Blaming the Victim, they talk about it, and a couple other people talked about it as well in Defense of Cinderella, where she is actually very resilient and she's very strong. And it's not until she actually starts to give up that she essentially has magicked the fairy godmother into existence.
Mm.
Because the fairy godmother says, if you had given up all hope and stopped dreaming, I could not be here.
Mm.
And so they make the argument that she has essentially wished this maternal figure into existence.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's more deep than I would have gone.
Sure. But it is hinted at.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think I watched it in the trap that you mentioned at the beginning, you know.
Very passively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've seen this so many times. Mm-hmm. There were little things I picked up here and there, but not much.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because the Disney version, they're the first one to really give motivation to a lot.
Okay.
So the whole part with like the king... like being the one who's spearheading everything in the mm-hmm. background.
Because he wants the grandkids.
He wants grandkids.
Yeah.
I love that he's like, it was like, I was really close to my son until he started growing up, but now he's so distant. And then in the pictures, it's like him on the back, and then it's like him like riding away from him, and mm-hmm. it's like him, like the dad's not even in the picture. Like,
yep.
It's stuff like that I think is so clever.
Yeah.
The king's hilarious.
That was funny.
The king is so funny. And so, like, the king's the one who throws the ball, not the prince. The prince doesn't even want to be there.
Because he's yawning the whole time.
Yeah, he's bored mm-hmm. of his mind. Like, he just got home. And it's funny because, like, the king's, like, he needs to settle down. Like, mm-hmm. It's funny because it also makes it sound like, in the brief discussion, it makes it sound like the prince has kind of just been living it up. Like, he's kind of just out there doing his thing and, like, not looking to settle down.
Okay.
And then he just happens to fall in love at the ball.
Yeah.
So, like, even he's not looking.
So, yeah. That adds credence to the it's not a love story.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, she's not looking for mm-hmm. that. Like, she goes and then she falls in love, but she also doesn't ever expect to see him again.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't go looking for him after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is what I love about the Disney version. You get the idea that she would have left right away once she found out that the prince was going to marry her.
Mm.
you get the sense that she literally was preparing to leave.
Mm.
Because, you know, she's starting her day, she's doing her thing, and then she finds out that the prince, she was dancing with the prince. So she's like, the prince? And she's like, I was dancing with the prince. But then when she finds out from her stepmother that the prince is going to marry the girl who fits the shoe, she literally drops the tray of tea and then, like, just goes to leave. Like, she's like, I got to get changed. I got to get dressed. I got to go, you know? And so that's when the stepmother realizes, oh, she's the girl.
Yeah.
And then that's when, in the Disney version, brand new, she locks her up. And so then the mice and the birds and everybody help her.
Yeah. Get the key.
Yeah. But you get the sense that she was, like, because she, like, is defying them. She, like, she was going to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she's like, oh, what am I going to wear? I need to change these clothes.
And,
yeah.
And so she found her out. She's like, I can leave this house and I will be okay.
Yeah.
And so there's that. So it's not like she was, it's not like she knew that was an out and was like, well, I think I'll stay. I think I'll stay in this house of abuse. You know? But then, you know my favorite part?
What part?
My favorite part of this movie is at the very end when the mice are trying to help her, right? And Gus Gus is stuck underneath the cup because of Lucifer.
Yeah.
And then and then all of the animals, like, go to help her, right? Like, they're trying to get Lucifer to stop and to get the key out and everything. And then she says, get Bruno. Right? Do you know why that's so cool, in my opinion?
Why?
Disney, in their version, and no other version I found does this, created a parallel between her and her stepmother and Bruno and Lucifer. Earlier in the film, she tells Bruno something that tells the listeners, the audience, her situation.
Oh.
It's a way of telling the audience why she stays.
Is it the part when she's like, oh, do you know how to...
So she finds Bruno... when she's, like, going to take Lucifer to get his breakfast.
In the kitchen in the
And Bruno's
morning.
Dreaming that he's chasing Lucifer.
And she chastises him for it.
Well, it's because she's like, were you dreaming of chasing Lucifer? Yeah. And then he nods, and he said, did you catch him? And he nods, and she says, that's bad. And then she says, she's like, you can't have dreams like that. Like, and she's like, because if they find out, you'll be out on the street, and you will be hungry, and you'll have no roof over your head, and all these things. So she's telling Bruno this, but you know she's saying it because she knows that for herself. Right?
Yeah.
And so she's saying, like it's okay to have dreams, but you can't dream that. And then she's like, there has to be something good about Lucifer, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, like, this, there's this parallel. Like, these are things she's thinking about her family. There has to be something good in them. Like, you have to look for the good, and you and like I and like for her, it's like, I can't leave because one, this is my home, but then where am I gonna go and all that stuff, right? So, like, passive viewers don't catch that.
Yeah, I didn't catch it.
Yeah. And so when it gets to the end, when she tells the animals, get Bruno, get Bruno. It's her, like, literally defying and being like, I'm, like, this is it. Like, I'm turning on this. Like if you're telling them to get Bruno, Bruno's going to go after that cat. So if you're going with that parallelism, like, like, she's done with the family. Like, that's why I love that moment.
So in this case, we did talk about Bruno.
We did talk about Bruno. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
That's funny. That's really fascinating. I never...
Yeah, that's something Disney added in, that parallelism.
Yeah, I never would have even put that together.
And that's why this movie is so nuanced, that people don't give it credit. Like, unless you obviously are looking for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I love all that stuff. And then, of course, you get the ending that Disney added in. I think Disney and other people like to do this just to tease with the audience. Because we'll talk about this a bit with... the 2015 adaptation.
Okay.
Something Kenneth Branagh said, he was the director for that film, as you know. He said, it's so difficult to make a story, an adaptation of the story and other stories, because everyone knows this story. And he's like, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
Everybody goes into the film saying, I know what's going to happen. And then what do you do with that? He's like, that's the problem.
Yeah.
And he didn't say this, but some people make it completely different. They completely change the story. And some people make it too much like the original. And those are two extremes nobody wants.
Correct.
So you have to pay homage to the source material, and you need to give the audience what they want, just enough. But then you can do things. You can elaborate. You can change. You can adjust. He's like, but you need to figure out what you're going to do.
Correct.
And so, because of that problem, sometimes you're going to tease the audience, and you're gonna throw them off guard a little bit, mm-hmm. right? And I love it because Disney does this, right? So at the end, when Cinderella comes downstairs and she says, then the Grand Duke's leaving, and she's like, wait, can I try it on? And then she goes to sit down, and the stepmother knows it's going to fit.
Yeah.
And so, like, her last ditch effort is to trip the guy who has the shoe, right?
Break it.
Mm-hmm. And it breaks. And so, like, the Grand Duke's like, oh my gosh, the king, what's going to happen? And then the stepmother's like, yeah, I got you beat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then Cinderella says, I have the other slipper.
Mm.
Right? Like, that's just a fun way that they mess with the audience,
yeah.
you know? But then it also, in a way, it like shows that Cinderella is like still fighting for this, you know? Like, I literally have the other slipper.
How do they know she didn't fabricate it?
Well, it fits, so.
True, but what if she created one just for herself?
Anyway, I love that because that's something they added, right? Like, they changed that. They changed that ending.
It's bugged me a little bit for that, for the logical reasons, just like we talked about with the other.
Because the talking mice are so logical. I know.
No, the logic in the sense of like, oh, she has another shoe. How did they know, like, she was the only other person in the kingdom who had another set of glass slippers and she is tricking them? I know that's...
Well, I think
it a little...
well, maybe
much.
A little bit, but if you remember, at least with the king,
mm-hmm.
the character of the king makes the story make more sense.
Correct.
Because
yes.
the king's the one who's driving the story.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for the king, like, none of this would be happening.
That's true.
And so, like, he's the one who's like, I don't care who he marries. I just want grandchildren. And so, like, in one level, it's actually kind of cool because he's like... I don't care if he marries a commoner. I just want the grandchildren, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, there's that, and that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. He's not the best person because he's a little maybe abusive of the Grand Duke. But but then later on when the Grand Duke tries to say that she ran away, and then he thinks, oh, he's getting married, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he tells him, he's like, he's like, the Grand Duke's defending himself because he's, like, going after him.
Yeah.
And he says... No, the prince wants to marry her, you know, like he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
And then the king's like, great, I got him. He's like, he's going to marry whoever the slipper fits. And he's like, but that could be anyone. He's like, I don't care. he's like, that's the bargain. He wants to do that? Great. He's like, whoever the slipper fits.
Yeah.
So the Grand Duke doesn't care. He's just there to, like, find whoever fits.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why I say
I can see that.
Character of the king, which they added in,
mm-hmm.
makes the story make more sense.
It
like
no,
how
it does.
Fast it moves, mm-hmm. and like maybe some of the illogical parts of it, you know, like the king makes the story make more sense.
Correct. No, now that you've explained it that way, I can actually picture it better. I think in my mind, sometimes my over-analytic mind tends to go mm-hmm. too into the weeds.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because these are great examples of why some of, like, the modern Disney remakes mm-hmm. don't work so much is because they over-explain things.
Mm.
And obviously they push their own agenda, but they over-explain things. Whereas in some of these early ones that Disney did, it's, like, one line.
Yeah.
And it makes enough sense that it's, like, great.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I would say it's a little... I think the musicals have done a better of explanation than they have in the... Like, I remember watching the first time the musical for Little Mermaid, and that's one area where I think
the Broadway productions do a great job.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
They do of adding that additional material in.
Just enough.
Just, yeah. It's so, but you're right. The live actions have not...
Mm-hmm. And that's what bothered me is because Disney already had the Broadway musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, literally it's the same company.
Yeah.
It's just... The people who work on the Broadway musicals mm-hmm. were completely different than the people who worked on the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a very different culture.
Mm-hmm.
Theater to movie, and especially Hollywood now, you know?
Yeah.
Not that Broadway is exempt from their own follies and...
True.
Literally, follies.
Yes.
Did you get that?
I did get that.
Thank you. Thank you. I just wanted you to get that, you know?
Yes.
Anyway.
I will say for the animation... It was funny because I tend to lump all the older movies together. And this is why I asked you earlier as to when it was Cinderella was as opposed to Sleeping Beauty. Because I'm watching it and I will say, yes, the animation was fine. It was good. I hold Sleeping Beauty as kind of the pinnacle.
Oh no, Sleeping Beauty is. We already talked on Sleeping Beauty. Sleeping Beauty is like Disney's high art.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
And even for them, it was its own thing.
And that's why I should have looked it up, but I was trying to reconcile in my mind how.
But also remember, Disney was flying high at that point.
Oh.
Disney had money.
Okay.
When they were making Sleeping Beauty.
That makes
in part
sense.
Because of Cinderella.
Mm.
Cinderella is a very simple story. Even the Disney version is a very simple story.
Yeah.
And yet it's so nuanced and impactful if you actually look at it.
Mm.
But it's because it's not spelled out for you.
Yeah.
Like you, it's in glances. It's in one line. It's in how they talk about it, you know?
Correct, yeah.
Obviously, people might say I'm biased because I grew up with it. I think some people might rat me off because I'm a guy. You know, I don't care, but I think there's a lot of truth to it. And like, I definitely think, at least from a good like Christian perspective, that it's a great movie. And I think the Disney Cinderella is a good role model for young women.
If fleshed out, yeah, I could see that. I think it would make for good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's if you're taking it for more than just a cartoon. It can.
Mm-hmm.
We got deeper into that one than I expected.
I did. No, I knew. I was ready.
Yeah, I'm glad you watched those. I need to watch more YouTube. I
need to watch more YouTube.
Well, because I accredit it to my generation. I'm sure there's plenty of my generation who watch YouTube, but I...
Too much.
You millennials can sit and watch it. I get bored after 5 minutes.
It depends on the video. Some of them, especially the ones that are more academic, like some of the videos I watched were a little bit more academic, and it felt a little bit more lecture-based, and they weren't as visual. And so I liked those because I could play those while I'm driving, or I could play them while I'm doing chores or something. There are videos that you really need to watch, and those ones are harder because, you know, you get busy, but...
That's why I usually don't watch YouTube, because I prefer podcasts because I can listen to them in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm kind of curious. I actually want to watch that one you were talking about, the Don't Blame the Victim.
Oh, yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to discuss that one with my
Well, it's funny because the first one I was talking about, I think by Aiden Elizabeth, where it was saying In Defense of Cinderella, she was saying, she's like, she views herself as a feminist. And she's like, but modern feminists have forgotten that it's about choice.
Mm.
Like, it's turned into you only have one option, and it's the opposite option that you used to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of the traditional feminist viewpoint of choose to be a housewife or choose a career or choose whatever, you know, now it's turned into just take over every masculine role, every masculine position, and that sort of thing. And you can see that in some of the issues people have with Cinderella or other things, where it's just fight back or just do this or...
Yeah. No, I see that. I would like to watch that video too. Send me that one.
I will.
But, you know, for our listeners, I would love for any of our female listeners out there, if you do have any takes, if you disagree with us or...
Get some nasty comments.
Yeah. Any insight, we would love to hear from you. You know, maybe down the road we can find someone. Mm-hmm. We go through this one too and get a female perspective.
Yeah.
That's really good. I'm glad, like I said, you watch those videos.
Well, and what I liked about this, because I told you this, the Cinderella, the movie, it's not a love story, because it's not. But
it's so amazing how, like, I never would have thought about that until you brought it up, because that's what we've been told.
Yeah, but
that's what we're ingrained in
our
minds.
I know. But it's funny because you could even make the argument in some of the fairy tales that those are not love stories either.
Yeah, true.
It's just she just ends up marrying him and she has a better life.
Mm-hmm.
The Disney version is the one where the prince is her ticket to a better life.
Yeah.
It just so happens they both fell in love when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just works out for them.
Well, this was a good one.
Thank you. I was looking forward to this one. I have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah. That's good. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, nothing else?
That's it.
All right. We'll probably have some more that we'll think of, but that will appear in our next episode. So stick around. And in our next episode, our last episode, we will talk about the 2015 live action Disney Cinderella.
Yes, we will.
Directed by Kenneth Branagh.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll explain why it is probably the best Disney live action film.
Looking forward to it.
All right. And we'll see you next time.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye. Next time on Willing to Adapt. Today, we are talking about the 2015 live-action film version directed by Kenneth Branagh, Cinderella.
I could have sworn it was a scene in the movie.
Nope.
Special Helena edition
Baum
out
Carter
there?
Said bibbidi-bobbidi-boo, and you chose to hear it as a song. Fun fact, did you know this?
Probably not.
They literally built the ballroom.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
They built that entire set with real chandeliers commissioned for the film, with real candles and a real live orchestra playing.
Wow.
And it was 500 extras, they said.
Dang.
Kenneth Branagh said in an interview that somebody told him, "Oh, so you stayed really close to the original 50s version, the 50s version," and he's like, "I don't think you watched the same film." And then she just says, "I forgive you." And then it like cripples the stepmother.
Today, she would have flipped her off or something.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please follow or subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also like it if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.